It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, Friday afternoons, HPR 1 stations statewide, and then online at hawaiipublicradio.org in our growing database of Helping Hand resources. Each week on Helping Hand, we try to put the spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to the disabled and to others among the most vulnerable. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we have a returning guest. We're thrilled to welcome back Helping Hands Hawaii, very similar name, but slightly different than our own here on the segment, and a program called Ready to Learn. Ready to Learn program we heard about last year. It helps Hawaii's less fortunate children to get the tools they need to succeed in the classroom. Through July 22nd, donation of $10 will fill a backpack with basic school supplies. We're going to hear about some of those in a moment. Donations also being accepted at any American Savings branch. And we're going to learn more right now with our returning guest, Jan Harada, President and CEO of Helping Hands Hawaii. Welcome back.
Aloha. Good morning, Dave.
Good to have you back here with us. Can you say good afternoon? Because it'll run.
Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, Dave.
Great to have you here. And before we get into the Ready to Learn aspect, which is really our focus today, just to let people know, because they may hear the name, read about Helping Hands Hawaii, fill us in on the mission.
So the mission of Helping Hands Hawaii really is to help some of Hawaii's most vulnerable in a few ways. One, we provide language interpreter services to immigrants with limited English proficiency so they can access things like medical care, child care services, social services.
They have to pay for that?
No, they're free. It's free for them, and the vendors that we work with pay for it instead.
Wow.
Then we also provide what we call housing stabilization and support services for low-income or homeless households. That's everything from basic material items like furniture, household appliances, clothing, food, you know, you name it. And then also emergency financial assistance for folks who are either at risk of homelessness or homeless and trying to get back into housing. And we also, with that, put in things like income generating things like, you know, public benefits or work programs, or sort of encouraging them to pursue greater education to help them increase their earning potential. So we kind of wrap that all in there. And then the third part is we work with adults with mental illness who are also, many of whom are also struggling with addiction, and all of whom are low income or homeless.
So a lot of your efforts basically geared around helping people who don't have a lot. And that's a short way of summing up what I just heard you say. And there's a lot of the same kids. Do we have a disproportionate number of children that would fall into this impoverished category in Hawaii? Because you always hear about like the free school lunch thing, and it's serving, serving something like 100,000 or more kids or something. I mean, do you have numbers that go along with where we stand in terms of how many people are struggling to get by?
Yes, actually, in the K through 12 in the DOE system, of the 170,000 plus public school students, roughly, you know, almost 50% of that are students who are coming from households that qualify for the free or reduced lunch, which means there are households that are struggling economically.
So that's, just to make sure I get that right, 50% of all public school kids.
Mm-hmm, over 50%. So it's close to 90,000 students that are coming from households that are in need.
Wow.
So it's a significant need.
Okay. Yeah. And with that, and I'm just going to imagine that on a national average of communities, this is higher, because it can't be 50% of all communities across the country.
I don't have the stats nationally, but I believe that is one of the higher rates in the nation.
Okay. That's what I would figure. Yeah, that's something to consider for sure. Besides trying to help out the many kids that come from households that don't have enough money, you mentioned some of the other things, because we're going to focus on Ready to Learn, but what are some of your other big, right now, aside from Ready to Learn, what are some other big challenges that Helping Hands Hawaii is tackling?
Well, we're one of many partners who are working on addressing the needs of those who are homeless. So we're one of many. And what our role is in that is we do a number of things. We help provide furniture and basic household furnishings and necessities for homeless that are moving into their unit for the first time. We do that through working with partner agencies. We are also helping in a partnership with Catholic Charities Hawaii to move chronically homeless who are struggling with addiction or mental illness into housing as a part of the Housing First model of work, and then providing them treatment and housing support services. We're doing that piece as well. Those are some of the more critical things. And then case management services for the mentally ill who are also struggling with poverty. Those are kind of...
You guys part of the Coalition Partners in Care?
Yes, we are.
That's an important one. And as we segue into Ready to Learn, I would imagine there's a, because that's a part of the homelessness issue that sometimes people don't think of. I mean, because homeless is just like, it's a word, and there's so many different people who can fall into that, and different ages, different reasons they're homeless, different lengths of time they've been homeless, different sets of economic circumstances that could help get them out of the homelessness or make it tougher to get out of. A lot of homeless kids, too, and I am assuming some of them will be recipients of the supplies because they are still going to school in a lot of cases.
Yes, definitely. All of the folks who are receiving supplies are either, again, living in poor households or are homeless. And, you know, it's interesting the tie-in. People assume that, oh, we're helping with supplies and they're focused on the supplies. Well, one story that we have from previously is, you know, we distribute those supplies, or we have in the past through just cheap plastic bags that we put the supplies in as their kits, and then they come, you know, it gets distributed. Some kids, you just assume they'll have something to put it in. But some kids were going to school at the beginning of the school year with the same plastic bag that the supplies came in because they had nothing else to put their supplies in. So it just sort of, you know, it illustrates the magnitude of it in a different way, even from the people who normally help. And so this year, American Savings Bank, who is our banking partner, really kind of came through and donated 7,000 drawstring bags for kids to put their supplies in. Because we assume that, again, they're going to have something, but you have kids carrying the plastic bag because that's what they've got.
And that's just a fraction, but it's such a huge number. It's
yes.
Startling to hear, because you mm-hmm. can imagine 7,000. I mean, these are 7,000 kids who are coming from a very rough background that
yes.
they would need that to mm-hmm. carry their stuff to school. Yeah, it's humbling, sort of. It's healthy to review these things in one's life from time to time because it really helps you to realize the things you have that maybe you don't really think about until you're faced with these little, as you were talking about, sometimes people don't think of the little, these details mm-hmm. are emblematic of profound struggles.
Yes, absolutely.
And when you put it that way, just thinking of those 7,000 bags, they're all going to go to a kid who's really got it bad. And those numbers, 50% of all public school kids translates roughly to how many kids?
About 87,000.
87,000.
So our program is one part of what's needed. You
yeah,
know?
I mean, exactly. It's yes. kind of like tackling the homelessness issue. I mean, mm-hmm. no matter how noble the service provider, there's a lot of people. So when you say 7,000 bags, that's a wonderfully generous thing. Then you compare it to 87,000.
Yes.
And it, as you just wisely said, it kind of, it shows you that a lot of people got to come together to help, which is why we've got you on. How do you identify the kids who are going to get these supplies? So we've got 87,000 kids who are coming from like a disadvantaged household across the state. How do you figure out who's going to end up getting these ready-to-learn kits that you're putting together?
Well, we start off by putting the word out to we're known for being good collaborators in the community. So what we do is we put out the word to all of our 100-plus partner agencies to say we're gearing up for Ready to Learn. The application process is coming, and there's a small application. And then we encourage the partner agencies to submit an application to, one, be a part of Ready to Learn, and then submit their sort of list of their counts of folk kids that are in need. And most of these organizations are, again, social service organizations themselves who are also working with the homeless. That's kind of the most efficient way for us to do it. That way, we actually cut down on program costs, because if we had to do it ourselves, we'd need more staffing, more
sure.
things. So we partner with everybody. They provide lists and applications, and then we distribute from there.
And so. The application, just to be clear, so we're saying a family that has a child that's in need, they need to apply for this, or in
through
some,
one of the partner agencies.
Okay. Yeah. And in some cases, though, these partner agencies have an ongoing rapport with these families because they're helping them on a lot of other things. So I'm going to, and you correct me if I'm wrong, some of these agencies may also be suggesting to them, hey, you know, we could get your kids some supplies to help them with school. Here's an application. And it sort of comes to them in that way.
Right. Absolutely. And there is a deadline, because especially before the start of the school year, we have to set a deadline for when we can get the applications in. Anybody who comes in after that is still eligible, but they just have to wait until the preschool year distribution happens. After that happens, then we distribute out through our clearinghouse, our community clearinghouse.
Makes sense. So after July 22nd, you start figuring out who's going to get what.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. It makes sense. And then, as you pointed out, once a year started, doesn't mean you can't still help other people, but it'll first you'll help out all the people who have been part of the initial roundup. And then people who still need supplies, what you have left over, you'll be able to help them with.
Yes, and actually we distribute throughout the year because people run out, sure. Things break, things go missing. So, you know, I mean, we distribute throughout the year.
So it's an ongoing source, if I'm reading you right, for people. So once this is done, the Ready to Learn continues to be active because in the middle of the year, they need more supplies. Mm-hmm. They can then reach back out to the same agency that helped them and say, we're running low on supplies, we need this or that. And
yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then they reach out to you guys and then you provide more supplies.
Yep.
That's impressive. Now, I had heard about people maybe listening. I'd like to help. And so you encourage people to, the best people can both make a donation of cash or something at an American Savings Bank location, or they can give some of the supplies that we'll mention here. Is that how, or what's
yes.
the best route to do it?
I mean, I think that would be the easiest. American Savings Bank is collecting both monetary donation and actual school supply donations at all of their branches statewide. So, and actually, so that means if you go into an American Savings Bank branch on Maui, those donations will go to help support, you know, Maui kids. Yeah. Even though we're physically located, we partner with others on other islands to sort of make that happen. You can also go online to our website and there's a PayPal link, and all donations actually in June and July made through PayPal are automatically directed to the Ready to Learn program.
Wow.
Because that's the drive period. And then there's also collection sites. I don't have that list, but it is on our website of other businesses that are helping out. Could be like, you know, just businesses in the community.
So at helpinghandshawaii.org, yes. Folks can find a list of places in addition to the American Savings Bank locations where they could drop off supplies.
Yes, absolutely.
And are there donations being collected at those two or just supply pickup?
Mostly just supplies.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, the supplies that they're looking for, the obvious sorts of things for young kids. And is there an age bracket, too, before? Is it, because I'm looking at the supplies and I'm thinking, is this younger kids? Is this younger? What is the range?
I think it's all ages.
It is.
I think the biggest need is elementary school, kind of middle school. But it's all,
we
try to help people all the way through 12.
Okay. 24-count crayons, backpacks, as we've illustrated, critical issue. And with 87,000 folks, that's a staggering number of potential backpacks and or other supplies on this list. Composition books, 4-ounce containers of glue, 4.5-inch scissors, so kid-friendly scissors.
Yes.
Portfolios, those that open up and you stick your papers inside of those. One-subject spiral notebooks. Folder paper, college or wide rule. What is folder paper? Is that like, individual sheets that are?
Yes, individual. You know, it comes in the stack and it's kind of got the lines on
it. And they're already individual pieces of paper.
Yes.
They're not, like, you don't pull them out.
No.
Of a thing. Ballpoint pens, black or blue. Rulers. And that is the basic list.
Mm-hmm. And calculators as well.
And calculators. I wonder why I didn't have that on my, and calculators. And these, now when, ideally in a perfect world, would you rather just be buying the supplies yourself because potentially you can get them at some sort of bulk rate because of your status as a nonprofit? Or is it, you know, so with your best intentioned group of folks listening right now and wondering, would you rather I just make a donation? Will that go further? Or would you rather I pick up these supplies and bring them into a place?
I think, you know, we say monetary donations tend to go further only because we do buy in bulk whatever we're short of. And then we're able to make sure that we have 7,000 plus of the same item. You know, people will sometimes donate and it's great, but it'll be, you know, sometimes a fancy calculator or something. And if we can't give out the same level of calculator to all 7,000 kids, we don't do it through the normal push. We will distribute it out at some point in the year, but it isn't part of the normal. Because we try to make sure from a fairness standpoint that all the kids are kind of getting the same basic things, you know. And so it's hard when we get pockets of donations of just one particular type of item, but yet we have maybe 100 of that. And we need, you know, 7,000. So
I get what you're saying, and you describe it well. And those are big issues when you're young. You just don't you know, and the psychological impact if he has this and I don't.
Right. And then there's no way for us to really determine, okay, we've got 100, you know, fancy calculators to give out. Who do we give that to of the 7,000 kids we're helping? So it's
And you
it's
keep,
hard.
Hey, I keep hearing 7,000. Is that like the core young group of this or something?
That's kind of the goal. Every year we average about 7,000. Some years it goes up to 8. So
in terms of supplies that
yes.
you get in?
No, that we help.
Oh, that are applications yes. and suggested applications
yes.
that come in. Okay, so
and that's throughout the year.
That's interesting to note. Mm-hmm. So of all these kids that potentially would qualify, there's really only a fraction that are applying for it, it sounds
yeah,
like.
I think applying for it, and then also we also base it on what we can do. Because if we have only so much in monetary donations and only so much in supplies, there's...
Do you get about that much each
year? We do. We expend some years. We have to expend more on our end to buy the rest of the supplies.
To make it up to,
yeah,
to get
I
to
mean,
seven.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we're spending over $30,000 to buy more. You know, in some years it's as low as $15,000. So it just depends.
And a lot of it also is probably people just don't know about it.
Yes. And so we're trying to get the word out. And that's why coming on a program like this actually is really huge. Because people then are aware. You know, or social media or other ways to sort of get the word out.
Yep.
It's really actually, ironically, social media is not and radio and everything else is not just to say get more donors. It's to also reach out to people who need it.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I was just thinking. I had a reverse sort of thought, which is there's a lot of people probably just don't know about this because with those high numbers, there's clearly a lot more that could take advantage of it. And yeah, sometimes stuff is just. You're just not aware.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Getting the word out for people who could use the service is the primary reason I do this feature. So we're thinking alike on that. In addition to the school supplies, and we now know, okay, through the 22nd of this month, you can go to an American Savings Bank, make a donation. $10 will get all this gear. You could donate the gear in your Helping Hand listing. I'll have it all written out too so folks can see what the basic school supplies are. Other ways to assist with this Ready to Learn program. Do you need any volunteers? You know, so for folks who are really motivated, you can paint a picture for ways they can also super help you.
Well, we do have different volunteer opportunities during Ready to Learn in particular. Like this past week, we just had a big group of actually American Savings Bank volunteers come and start to help us package supplies that have already come in. And they did close to 3,500 kits of school supplies. And this Saturday, we're doing another run, you know. And so it just... We're going to keep going. So if anybody's interested in volunteering, that's probably the primary, the biggest help right now is to help put together the actual... supplies into the bags.
And that'll go past the 22nd, I'm assuming.
Yes, yeah.
So that's a great thing for the mm-hmm. rest of the... So, and also, just thinking out loud, you correct me if I'm wrong, parents who are trying to instill a sense of give back in their kids, because it's amazing how many folks... Sometimes it just takes almost your whole life going by before you realize, like... You know, because I interview a lot of artists on the show, like musicians.
Mm-hmm.
After I started doing Helping Hand, I'd occasionally ask folks about the ways that they're giving back. Because sometimes, as you pointed out, with it gets the awareness out there so other people can learn. Like just about, you know, spreading this, then people can learn, wow, I could help them out with that. What's also like if somebody says, yeah, I do this certain kind of thing, then somebody listening might say, I would like to do that too and give back. And it's shocking how many folks just don't really, haven't been touched yet. I guess it's real easy to just think about the big sports game and how tragic it is. The guy didn't catch the ball or whatever. And you're not really thinking about the other things that are going on. So if parents would like to instill in their children, so throughout the summer, kids who are just sitting around, maybe not doing anything, you guys would be welcome to have them volunteer, perhaps?
I mean, there are some age and safety sort of considerations.
What's your age that you are?
I would probably say high school is the best.
Sure.
If they're going to come in and they're younger, they have to come in with their parents.
Yep, that's what I was thinking, too.
From a safety standpoint. But we have had, I mean, we do this partnership also with KITV. They run a school tools thing, and we just did the drive at Sam's Club and Walmart and Keomoku, and we had a high school student that was doing a community service project around school supplies and needs of low-income students. So she came out to help that day, help us collect donations. So there's so many different ways that kids can get involved. And the thing is, like you mentioned, a lot of times sometimes it's not that they don't want, people don't want to help, it's that they don't know. It's just not in their frame of reference.
Right.
You know, it's not in their everyday life. Or they might be like, I want to help, but how do I even start? Do I cold call some organization that I look up online? Or, and most people aren't comfortable with that. They want more of a personal reference,
that's right.
You know?
Yeah, you got to kind of open the door to it. And sometimes, yeah, it's just not that people are bad people. They just haven't been touched in some way to make them realize, I would like to do this, or I could do this, or what have I done to help out? And sometimes you don't think like that that's even going to be, you know, you come here, you don't know what to do. You're just born, you're on this planet. You can follow other people's models, and that's all there really is. And you try to follow mm-hmm. the best models, whether mm-hmm. it's the things that you learn in school, the values your parents or other mentors teach you. But invariably, we're all just sort of on our own here, and there isn't really necessarily a path. What do? You're born, and then eventually you die. What you do in between that period, it may not occur to some folks. And mm-hmm. then when it does, you begin pondering things a little differently. Like, you know, do I do things to help other people? Is that part of my responsibility in life? You know, before I pass on into the next phase of whatever I am, is that part of what I should be doing with my time instead of getting so worked up about, you know, my favorite team didn't get into the playoffs and now I'm bummed about that for several weeks and complaining for 20, 30, 40 minutes, an hour at a time about it. Possibly you could see, wow, like you said, you don't know where to plug yourself in. So it's great to put roads out there for people, that there are ways you could do things that might, and it might feel good inside. It's not just about like it's your responsibility. You might discover how good it feels to know, you know, when somebody who's truly in need looks up and says, thank you so much, you know, you go, wow, I did something.
Right. And nothing, and no, something is too small. You know, so some people think, well, does that really make a difference? You know, and it's amazing. Again, I think that story of the kid who's carrying the plastic bag with school supplies because he's got nothing else to carry it in. And, and so that nothing is too small. So the impact of simply having something to put their stuff in is significant to that kid in terms of morale and sort of their motivation to go to school, you know, and their sort of their whole affect. It really makes a difference.
That's a great way of describing it. I mean, just something to put your stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings it home for folks who have so many things, because we're such a materialistic world. We're the only society basically on planet Earth that I'm aware of that have a storage industry that exists, because we have so much stuff. We have so much physical junk that we acquire, and I have an apartment full of it, man. After my mom died, I have boxes and boxes of stuff. I'm like, what are you ever going to do? You know, but you don't want to touch it because it's like it was hers, you know. But,
right. You
know, and we accumulate. We're like pack rat kind of mentality. And when you put it that way, a kid who has nothing to bring their stuff to school in, and they're using a bag that was given that, you know, a courtesy bag basically to carry around their supplies, it drives the point home immensely. So we have ways to help make this happen. We've illustrated the locations, American Savings Bank, at their website, helpinghandshawaii.org. You can find other locations, too, to make a drop-off of supplies. We're clearly a $10 donation at the American Savings Bank locations will buy all of these supplies. An email form exists at helpinghandshawaii.org. So if you're interested in becoming a volunteer, you have some kind of question, by all means, that's how to reach them. If you want to call directly to the Ready to Learn program, 440-3812 is how to do that. Anything that we left out that we need to include in there?
No, I mean, I think that's good. That's all the information. You know, I think it's important to note also, people might think, well, we hear multiple things about school supply drives. You know, there's different things going on and people might be like, well, there's an overlap. There's too much school supply drives going on. And so I always sort of bring it back to the amount of need. You know, there's 80-something thousand kids out there who need help with school supplies. So I don't care if you got 10 other efforts going on, that's still not meeting the 80,000 needs. So there is no chance or no danger that there's going to be an overlap because all of it's needed. So we always say, hey, if for some reason you don't connect with our Ready to Learn, but your company is helping some other school supply drive, have at it because the need is there. To us, it doesn't matter whether you help us out in our program because it's not really about us. It's about the kids. So however you're going to help the kids with school supplies, that is the most important thing.
Yeah, that's a great point that you mentioned in terms of just because every week we put another thing on this, you know, and there are lots.
Mm-hmm.
Got the Alzheimer walks coming up. You know, we got ALS going to be on. We've got the National Federation of the Blind coming up. You know, we're going to have, I mean, it's just like there are so many problems. There are so many people in need, you know, and I think that's the fatigue of being, maybe it's because of the social media and the way that we're so connected now, you get more, you know about more of the people. There's so many organizations trying mm-hmm. to help so many different things. I mean, there's a lot of problems. So as you point out, grab one and try to do yeah. what you can for it.
Because that's consistent with like Helping Hands. Our philosophy is we're not competitive in that sense or territorial. And our mission is the people. So it really doesn't bother us if you decide that, you know, what we do is not exactly in your sort of frame of what you want to help with in terms of giving back, you know, and you want to help another organization. Great. You know, I mean, the need is so great in many different areas. It's sort of like help focus on the things that you're passionate about, because that's probably going to be the area where you're going to then be more motivated to help the most.
Why do you do this? What made you? Because it's not a lot of, you know, like I said, it's usually like somebody's been touched by something to make them.
Sure. And then, you know, that.
You don't have to talk about it.
For me personally, I do this because my parents grew up in a rough, you know, time period. So my dad grew up in poverty. He really had nothing, you know, and there were six kids, my grandparents, and community center up the street helped save his life, you know, sort of impressed upon him the value of a good education, taught him how to swim. He happened to be good at swimming. He got a swimming scholarship. Finished high school at a private high school to sort of help him at that time even get a better education. Went to college on a full scholarship. All things that would not have happened were not for the people who helped him when he was poor and living in, you know, Kalihi and Palama and had nothing. And my grandmother sent him up the street to stay out of trouble and not end up somewhere else that he shouldn't be. And so, I mean, so everything I am now, everything I do, my education, my positions, any awards or things I've done have nothing to do with me. I really look at that as it has everything to do with the people who helped him and also helped my mother when she was younger, sort of, you know, make it out of tough times. I'm that product of that. So for me, I always look at it as, you know, the person who helped him, maybe my dad or my mom back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, might not be around today, and they might not see the actual long-term impact of what they did.
Right, how you're keeping their generosity alive.
Yeah, I'm the walking, living, talking example of what just a sometimes simple gestures can do years in the future. And so I tell people all the time, you might not get the tangible result. So many people are focused on, well, I want to know that right now, I want to know that my donation, my community support made an impact in some tangible way that they can realize. What they don't also see is that impact, you might not see the full effect of that impact until 40 years later, when that person that you helped, that kid or that, you know, adult that raised a family then is, you know, living life in a very different way than they would have otherwise.
That's a great point about all of the giving too, because mm-hmm. a lot of, and I wonder if it isn't the technology that's made us so instant gratification, and then you kind of condition your giving based on, well, I want to do something where I can see the results right away. And that can be for somebody still a rewarding thing, but you raise a great point. It's kind of like, you know, we cover the rhino poaching crisis on Helping Hand now because it's rooted in Asia, because people in Vietnam and China want their horns for some variety of reasons, despite the fact that science has said they do not do anything. And you're brutally, barbarically killing these animals mm-hmm. to get them. And it's like, you know, you make a contribution by either getting awareness to that topic or you kick some money to one of the myriad of organizations that are doing everything possible to protect these otherwise defenseless creatures. You may feel like you're describing, you know, where is the tangible sign that my $40, my $100, my $200, my $400 is helping to stop this. But that's, you know, what you point out is an important thing to remember, I guess, about a lot of things in life, that there are a lot of moving pieces and you go into it with the best intention that you can possibly have. And there are a lot of ways that these things do go on to help out. You just, you know, because you can't see the light turn on does not mean it's not turning on at some point, you mm-hmm. know, and that it helps to enable a greater mm-hmm. thing to take place.
And it's usually, and it's, even though it's, we talk about resources and getting donations and getting different things, to me, the biggest impact of any of this work, whether it's school supply, is the people part of it. So it's usually, you know, when you have big barriers, like you're talking about poverty or homelessness or hunger or education, it's resource is a part of that formula. But the bigger part to me, the bigger challenge is the people part of it and the systems piece of it. And really looking at how you change mindsets and how you, you know, affect people's heart and not just what's in their brain, you know.
Totally.
What they're conditioned to think and do.
Yeah, reconditioning folks to eventually be thinking about others in need more regularly, because it's easy to, because everyone has their own problems, you know, you have a lot of problems going on in your life, but it often helps when you have an example of somebody who's really got it much worse, and it's a strange way to live, but it can buy you some sort of sense of ease, because you realize, man, you know, you think you got it bad. This kid can't, he has all these school supplies, he can't even bring them to school,
mm-hmm.
you know, or it's like, you think you have it bad, you can walk. Take a look at these people who cannot. So,
it's just to sort of live your life without judgment. Sort of, we try to do that at Helping Hands too. It's like not judging people based on exterior circumstances, but really trying to take a step back and understand their story. Even if somebody who's doing something horrible, right, or did something bad.
Right. There were ingredients that went into it.
The challenge of stepping back and understanding that they weren't born that way.
Right.
That something about their life, something about their circumstances, something about their story led to that moment or those moments. And not judging them based on what is in that moment, but trying to help understand what's come before that.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot out of the experience from your dad.
And yeah, my dad and my mom, you know, it just drives me to do what I do, you know. And I think anybody can make a difference. That's the other important thing when you talk about programs like Ready to Learn.
Sure.
Is you don't have to be in social services,
right,
to make a difference. You can be in the banking sector. Look at American Savings Bank. You know, you can be in the education system. You can be in law. I mean, you can be
right.
In healthcare. You could be the janitor at the school building that helps look after kids. I mean, it doesn't matter. Position doesn't matter. Title doesn't matter. You know, money doesn't matter in that sense when you're looking at people who have voices and want to make a difference.
That's right. That's a great way of looking at it. Yeah. I mean, through that kind of collaborative effort, you can find a way to do good. There
yes,
is a,
absolutely.
Like you pointed out, if you don't want to do it with the school supplies, but you want to go walk for MS, then
yep.
That's a great thing to do.
Absolutely.
Because you're playing the role that you're seeking to instill in people. I like it. Very impressed with the organization. HelpingHandsHawaii.org is Jan Harada's the way to reach her and what she's up to. And as always, with all of our segments, you can find the full interview, the radio feature, all their contact information, and all of our other Helping Hands segments, and all of the details that go along with them at HawaiiPublicRadio.org, where they are archived online. Jan Harada is president and CEO of Helping Hands Hawaii. Really a pleasure to get to talk to you again. And organizations truly being led by somebody who's got some, you know, I learned just talking to you. So it's a blessing today just having, you know, listened to the things that you were talking about. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dave.